This is the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast from Advanta IRA, where we show you how to explore investments beyond Wall Street and open your eyes to new options for your portfolio. It's time to take control and give yourself the freedom to choose where you invest your money.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. As always, my name is Alex Perney, and today we are very pleased to welcome on with us Tony Saliba, founder of Liquid Mercury. And we're going to be going over some very topical things today. It's going to center around changing economic standards in the financial industry with regards to implementations of things like cryptocurrency, electronic currencies, blockchain, a lot of stuff that people, you know, you've certainly heard about it in the news, whether or not you're very well versed in it. It's kind of why we're having this discussion today. But Tony, thank you so much. I know the most precious resource we all have is our time. So thank you very much for being with us today and spending some of that unreplenishable resource with us. So if you would, give us a little bit of background about yourself, and then we'll kind of dive into the topic at hand.
Thanks, Alex. Great to see you again. Grew up on the trading floors of Chicago, trading listed options in the pit, mostly late 70s and throughout the 80s, early 90s. And then I traveled around Europe and Asia and Australia with a software package that I had created to help professional traders and brokers manage their options execution and order management. And then in the first decade of this century, I launched Liquid Point, which became and still is the dominant workflow automation for professionals trading listed options in the U.S., which is the most active product, trading product on the planet, deepest markets and such. And then I sold that company to the Bank of New York and started two companies in 2017, a brokerage called Matrix Execution, which still operates. I left Matrix last year to run the other company, Liquid Mercury, which handles digital assets, cryptocurrencies, and digitized, tokenized assets. Basically, necessity is the mother of invention, and this industry needs what we did in the option space.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it's important for people to understand just kind of, you know, how pervasive this is and kind of the direction that it's going. I get asked from time to time my opinions on it, and I kind of give everyone the same general ideas that, you know, with any emerging technology, there's going to be, you know, kind of a mass rush to look at it. Things are going to stick, things aren't going to stick, but eventually are going to distill down, you know, kind of all the noise and get to something that's a usable product. I still think we're kind of well in that distillation process of saying, okay, great, we have something where, you know, the basis was a white paper written in 2008. You know, again, there's been some other stabs at it, but kind of what most people look at is the genesis of Bitcoin kind of being what kicks off this whole thing that we're on to now. And, you know, really hasn't been around for too long. We're talking 15 years of a marketplace where you talk about something like options, or you talk about something like stock markets, where we have 50, hundreds of years behind the marketplaces and the workflows around this stuff. So understanding kind of, again, generally where it is and where it isn't is very important. So give people a little bit of an idea. You know, when you talk about, you know, something, doing something for the option space that you had done for the digitized assets, when we're talking about things like tokenized assets and digital assets, in a very broad sense, what's kind of the core focus of what Liquid Mercury does in that space?
Well, we move messages around between different users and venues, being exchanges or OTC desks or liquidity centers, and match buyers and sellers. So we allow traders and agents to manage their workflow, which can get sort of tedious if you're trading products that have a lot of different components, which derivatives end up having. So that's we're a technology shop. We're integrated with the custody solutions because on digital assets, on normal trading, you have your clearing firm or your brokerage firm, and they handle your banking. In digital assets, you can handle that yourself. That's called cold storage or cold wallet, which is how this all started. Or you could have your exchange, and now in some cases, your prime brokerage entity, prime broker, handle the custody. So the custody is your assets on their books and in their control and their safety. So we connect to all that stuff. We're a big super network infrastructure play, and we have some of the big names on our system, but you know, we're basically a startup, a few years old, and plowing through the needs of institutional players. We're a B2B.
Gotcha. Now, a few things that you kind of said that I want to touch on, and we'll go through these incrementally, were custodial solutions and then liquidity issues for the underlying liquidity measures of markets. Because I find the liquidity aspect of the cryptocurrency markets very fascinating. Most people are just like, it just kind of goes over their head, and maybe it's missing the mark a little bit, but I got an expert I want to ask. But for the custody solutions, I know a lot of people, again, trying to aim to educate people in this space. You know, we hear a lot about issues with security in cryptocurrency as exacerbated by things like, you know, whatever you want to call FTX and Alameda Research, a raging dumpster fire or mismanagement. Pick your own adjective. But, you know, it certainly
does. One word, sorry, fraud.
Perfect. Well, actually, yes, the we don't have to be leery of that because the court case is finalized. We can call it what it was, which was inherent mass fraud.
Yes.
So to that point, people are rightfully concerned about security. And with as unregulated of a market as cryptocurrency is, it leads to malfeasance and bad players being able to operate on a very large scale. So with regard to the custody, what are some things that, you know, maybe if not you were trying to aiming to fix, if the institutions are looking to aim to fix, because that's, again, kind of one of those things where people hear a lot about fraud and issues with cryptocurrency, and the security of anyone's assets is really key. We don't have as much to worry about in the regulated securities markets, but in these markets, what are some of the primary issues and how are they being solved?
Right. So on the FTX situation, it happened easily because they had so many of the functions that we're used to in traditional finance all under one roof, one stack. Okay. You had liquidity provision, agency, clearing, and banking all in one stack. On Wall Street and traditional markets around the globe, those things are separated. I grew up on the options floor and markets, and as liquidity providers, I was a market maker. We put up our own capital. We competed with others around us on the floor and off the floor to provide bids and offers for the product competitively. But then once we executed, the package went to the OCC, and the OCC is the Options Clearing Corporation, and they were the clearing entity. And then the packages, the cash went to one clearing firm, and the option for the buyer went to the other clearing firm, and there's where we had our accounts, or you as a customer would go to Schwab or Fidelity or Tasty Trade, wherever you trade, and that's where your account is. And then that agent, that broker, that agency would be responsible for wiring in or wiring out or maintaining your positions. You get statements, you could call somebody. In digital assets, in cryptocurrency, that started out all in one place. And it's being, and over the last few years, being separated, because those of us from traditional finance have come in and said, we'll connect to the custody service of your choice. And Fidelity's doing this, Northern Trust is doing this. But then there's also independent custody solutions that have been tested, have been around a while, and all they are is a big vault, right? So what's happening, and I'll give you your viewers and listeners a little analogy. The internet goes back to, I think, the late 70s or early 80s, that there was an internet that we all didn't, you know, none of us had access to, but it was functioning. And then in the late 80s or early 90s, it became more available to other institutions, companies, and individuals. Our domain goes back to 1990. So we started email in our own domain on the internet in 1990. 9 years later, brokerages cropped up to trade equities, stocks, and options on the internet. So for 10 years, this was available before brokerages became aware of it. The early brokerages were startups that said, hey, I can do this cheaper, faster, better using this internet. And large institutions like Schwab and Fidelity and Merrill Lynch and others didn't start adopting the internet for their execution. They were late adopters. They had seen some of these smaller firms. They were advertising on TV. They were into it 2, 3, 4 years before the big guys started to embrace using the internet. If you thought about it today, none of your audience would even imagine executing equity or option trade or futures trade, whatever they're trading, without using the internet. I mean, that's how we all do it today. So the digital asset space is growing up and it's becoming more like traditional finance with the values that digital assets bring to the party. We can talk about those next, but basically I wanted to kind of bring that picture in and what is happening or what's been happening in the last year or two since FTX was outed as a bad actor due to fraudulent behavior. They literally stole their customers' funds. That wouldn't happen in a traditional finance institution because they're separate from a trading company, which Alameda was, and they moved those funds. It's all a matter of court proceedings now.
Yeah, and I think is it fair to say that some of the issues, and this is going to be kind of a little bit of a longer point to a question, is that part of the issue is that when you have things that are on this kind of cutting edge, you have people that are trying to wear all of the hats. They're going to be the broker, they're going to be the exchange agent, they're going to be providing liquidity. And the problem with part of that liquidity that they were doing was their own self-issued token, which was kind of interesting. That whole capacity.
Yeah, that was like, whoa.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, that was weird. So you have them trying to like clear, broker, customize, do everything under one roof. And with the lack of, you know, regulatory oversight that, you know, not to say they wouldn't have tried to do this if there was oversight, but it kind of allowed for an ecosystem for that to happen. Now, one thing that I like to ask professionals in this space is that one of the nice things about cryptocurrency is that, you know, the regulations get to be kind of, they can kind of be written into effect in a way that best suits the industry while still protecting customers. From your kind of opinion, where do you kind of see where do you see that regulation is going to really help and maybe parts that where there might be regulatory overreach to kind of make something that is accessible and, you know, quote, safer for individuals to engage with?
Right. It's right around the corner for Americans. It's already present in other jurisdictions. Last year, the EU passed a sweeping set of regulatory frameworks that it's called MiCA. Some people call it MiCA, M-I-C-A, and it spells out a lot of these things we're talking about. And it's kind of like if you and I went out to this giant field and I said, "Let's play ball," and you're like, "Okay, what are we playing?" "Oh, we're gonna play ball." So until I showed you a ball and you just looked at this giant grass field, you would still be scratching your head. Am I bringing out a hard ball, a soft ball, a volleyball, a football, a soccer ball, a rugby ball, whatever, right? Then you could go to that field with lines on it, and I don't need to tell you show you the ball. You could see that this is a soccer field or this is a football field. I mean, obviously, there's fields with dual purpose. The thing is, you need to lay the lines down, okay? And the U.S. regulatory system is now claiming that their lines have always been there for securities, and anything that's trading is a violation. And they haven't said so much in a rule set, but they're regulating through enforcement. So if you do something that you're crossing some line, they come after you. Now, that isn't helpful for American investors. It's not helpful for American businesses. And it's not helpful for the American government's revenue generation, because they could have a flourishing industry to a much greater degree here that they can tax. But this is happening in Singapore and in Hong Kong and in the UK and the EU and island nations, because they have signaled to their users, their constituents, that these are the boundaries. You step out of these boundaries, we're going to come after you. You're going to have a problem. That's coming, I believe, in the U.S. I've seen the shoots of that through luminaries and important figures like Larry Fink of BlackRock going from a crypto denier or basher to saying, oh yeah, crypto's the new gold, and his company filing for an ETF, and they have like a 90-something percentage approval rating when they file for an ETF. So I think that's coming down the path, and a number of other signals like Cboe Digital has announced they're launching a new futures product on Bitcoin in January with a bunch of players from traditional finance. EDX is Schwab and Fidelity in partnership with Citadel and Virtu, literal four household names in the equity and option space. There's billions of dollars being invested in this space in this country. So it's literally a matter of months before I think they come out with a framework to give America. I mean, you can go and trade on Coinbase today, but you can't trade on DeFi, and you can't trade on overseas exchanges because they don't want Americans. It's too much trouble if the SEC comes after them. So this has to change for our own good here.
And do you think that those markets, those external foreign markets, will be opened up once we have some more concrete framework? So it's not just kind of like shots in the dark of like, hey, we don't know what's going to come. Now that we have a rule set, they'll open those markets up.
Yeah, some of the exchanges are much more skittish than others. They don't want to be tied up in a regulatory morass with our regulatory structure. So as soon as whether it be CFTC or SEC or FINRA or OFAC or, you know, the other entities that may touch, you know, digital assets, once they signal they're not going to go overseas and create headaches for these exchanges, yes. But also, why would Americans want to move their money offshore and trade on foreign exchanges if you can do that easily, safely, and cost effectively in your own country? I mean, it just makes sense. And I think we keep getting close, but I'm not sure why it's not here yet. I mean, I can make guesses, but I'm not sure why it's not here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you can deal with anything doing it domestically, financially, then, you know, in a foreign country, it's going to make your life most of the time, all else remaining equal, probably a little bit easier.
There's plenty in your audience. I would say 5% of your audience or thereabouts hold some crypto assets, digital assets. Maybe they trade at Coinbase. Maybe they set up their own wallet and went on DeFi. Okay. It's not that hard to do. And it makes sense to dabble because it's portable.
Yeah, absolutely. And the speed of transactions is really, kind of the underlying thing, which actually the analogy that I want to frame out here for in a second is going to kind of lead into my next question, which had to do about the underlying liquidity standards of these markets, because that's a thing that people aren't quite grasping and the big difference between these markets. Anecdotally, my dad used to do a lot of business in Southeast Asia and, you know, Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan, Malaysia. And he used to joke with me sometimes, like, if I'm over there trying to get something done and negotiate and pay someone, the 20 hours it takes me to get there, it would have been faster for me to load up a suitcase full of gold and cash and try to get business done than it would be to try to wait for a wire to clear all of the different systems. And that has to do with, one, the ancient systems of mechanisms of money that is, but also the fact that these things have different underlying liquidities that have to be exchanged across, you know, you send money, it's not just like a telegraph wire that travels across the Atlantic. It has to clear different firms and it gets exchanged. There might be losses and gains. There's a bunch of different things that happen in there to that point. So one thing that crypto definitely offers is a much more expeditious trading platform, whether that is securities, options, or products, or just a mechanism of commerce, which I think is really interesting to this, which I think is a big benefit to not only institutions and governments and people in general, but a whole economic system that relies on information age. We're dealing with a banking system that was fundamentally developing its electronics in the 70s. You know, I like the stereos from the 70s. I don't like the banking technology.
I love it. I'm just going to stipulate to what you just said and amplify that. That's exactly what's going on. I mean, you said telegraph. I use this all the time. In 1844, Samuel Morse sent the first Morse code from D.C. to Baltimore. At that point, banks were messaging through Stagecoach and Pony Express, okay? And then as soon as the telegraph, they said, whoa, we can communicate faster over wires. And then, boom, the U.S. set up, wires out to the West. And within literally a couple years of that, they did have a method to communicate send telegrams. The banking community today is predominantly stuck in the same communication structure of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Some banks, we talked to one bank this morning that has been approved to actually handle digital assets here in the U.S. And the banking system is really nervous. The heart and soul of American banking is the regional bank. That's who lends you your money for your mortgages and all that. And they're really scared of CBDCs, the central bank digital currencies, because those all would come from the Fed. And then JP Morgan and the big boys would have a direct pipeline into their customers. So they're scrambling to insulate themselves. And the regulatory environment is not making it easy. So you're at risk of losing some local banks, a lot of them in the near term.
Yeah. Now, do you think, so there's kind of, and that leads again into my question, I keep kind of hinting around it, is the issue with the liquidity standards for cryptocurrency markets being kind of what they like to term stable coins, which I find problematic in and of themselves, because there's been several times, leading up to the FTX disaster, that we've had them depeg from being based on a US dollar, which is very problematic if you're trying to execute a trade and then all of a sudden the liquidity standard for that market is now no longer par value with what people want. So to that effect, do you think that, well, maybe you could probably explain it in better words than I can, being in the securities world for so long. Can you explain in a digestible format what liquidity means for a market when we're saying this, when I say something like stablecoin versus US dollar liquidity standard?
Right. Okay. So the problems that happened last year with so-called stablecoins, and I say they're so-called because the reserves really weren't up to where they needed to be, and the mechanisms were exploited by bigger players, right? So the notion, a stablecoin, digital dollar, if you will, if it has enough reserves, then it's not going to be ripe for manipulation. The other thing is that it happened last year in the summer of 22 was SEC lending, securities lending. Securities lending has developed over decades in the U.S. market, where stock loan used to be a rare thing that was only for professionals in the 60s and 70s. And then in the 80s, it started becoming more popularized for bigger non-professional customers. And now anybody can check a hard to borrow list with, with their clearing firm or their brokerage firm and borrow some stock to short stock if they have enough money in their account. And what was going on last year, Alex, with the lending, the market, the Bitcoin and the other tokens had gotten so overextended in the pricing, it was frothy, and pros saw this as a really rich, ripe selling opportunity, and they were willing to pay unsustainable amounts of interest to borrow tokens, borrow Bitcoin from lenders to short sell. And, you know, I was hearing friends of mine that were getting, you know, this is in a very low, 0.12% interest environment of 18 months ago. They were getting like 10% to lend their Bitcoin. And what happened with some of these institutions that went belly up was they were overextending their lending. And then when the price of Bitcoin spiraled down, that was their asset. They weren't in dollars, they were in Bitcoin, and it was a house of cards from that regard. So I think the government is, you know, FINRA and SEC are correct to put parameters on lending and having reserves and such. So the liquidity piece that you're talking about, it ebbs and flows based on the situation. The stable coin or the, you know, a digital dollar, if you will, they're not all created equally. You know, Tether works, okay? It has never prevented anybody from liquidating or from redeeming. So Ripple, Tether, USDT, these are stable tokens that have enough reserves, at least as far as I can see. Exchanges like Gemini have enough reserves one-to-one, so there isn't a run on your account if you trade there. I think Coinbase is in the same situation. This gets shaken out of the marketplace. I don't think this is going to be happening, definitely not commonplace going forward. And the regulators are right. The SEC was created to protect the small investor from bad advertising and, you know, huckster salesmanship. And this is, you know, truth in advertising, discussing, telling them what they actually have and putting it on their website and being very transparent. We're 1-to-1 or we're 1.1-to-1. I mean, the U.S. banking system is, 8-to-1, 12-to-1. They lend on top of lending. So I think they'll get their house in order here, or they are getting it in order with these stable tokens that have survived.
And do you think and to kind of transition a little bit into, you know, what the U.S. government is doing, because I say that's probably the biggest questions I get asked on cryptocurrency are, one, high-level stuff, like, okay, like, you know, what does this mean? Then the second one would be kind of like, all right, well, explain storage options to me. And, you know, I'll kind of go through that. The third one I inevitably get, whether they're talking about cryptocurrency or not, is I get asked for my opinions on what is being touted as US's, the treasury coin, the US token that's supposedly going to be coming out by the government. And, you know, I always kind of make the analogy a little bit like, well, the government's trying to do this. Like, the government issues you your money that's in your wallet. You know, it's got a serial number on it. Granted, it's a lot more anonymous to go spend a $100 bill or a couple ones. But, I try to assuage people's a little bit of their fears of that. I'm like, it's just the digital version of the dollar you have to a point. But what do you think is really kind of going to be the aim point? Do you really think this is going to come to fruition? And if you do, what do you really feel is going to be the implementation of a governmental issued cryptocurrency?
Well, I think it's a Trojan horse. I think that they're selling it as a natural progression to make things easier for us. But the reality is you can't detach a CBDC, central bank digital currency, so-called, FedNow is pushing this, and this is what they're going to try to digitize the dollar. It limits your mobility. You're less in less control of your own banking system. The dollar, the U.S. dollar, paper or coin, is untethered from any information system. You can put it in your mattress. You can haul it around a wheelbarrow, whatever. The digital dollar will come with it, as you mentioned, lack of anonymity, will be give banks and the government the ability to regulate how you spend it, where you spend it, social scores. These are things you may hear or read about that I don't think are Orwellian at all. I mean, they are Orwellian to implement, and I think that there are plenty of individuals in government roles that think that's fine. And it's scary. I think that we should demand anonymity. We should be able to invest where we want without Big Brother controlling, pulling back that investment. And that's a downside of this. Upside would be, hey, I can do what I do with my Bitcoin today. And it's a dollar versus a, because one of the things you haven't said is the volatility of Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the other popular cryptocurrencies. And yeah, they are volatile to some degree, very volatile at times, but that's because the dollar is really volatile. And the dollar's pricing is the corollary to the cryptocurrency's pricing. And I think that, you know, I just had a call with one of our clients that is a research shop, and they can show you how a small amount of Bitcoin or Ethereum in your stock portfolio improves your Sharpe ratio to a dramatic degree because they're not correlated. And so they're a decent investment vehicle, and they're harder to manipulate by the government than gold is, for instance. And mm-hmm. keeping the price of gold down is something that banks and institutions have done for a long time, so that, you know, because they don't transact in gold. So I think the Fed digital dollar people should be wary of. About a dozen states or more have already passed state laws making the digital dollar illegal in their state. I think they'll be challenged by the Fed and lose. And other states are moving to have their own digital currency that they prove that they're transparent and there's anonymity in an effort to block the Fed dollar to come in and give their citizens the ease of digital access. But that's going to be a fight that's really going to roar in 2024, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, if the federal government wants it well enough, you know, they'll get it. You know, look at what they've done with monetary policy for states challenging them. While I think the government was on the right side, 100% on the right side when you had desegregation going on, they withheld federal transportation funds from southern states that didn't want to integrate their schools, which was thumbs up to the federal government for, you know, getting that pushed through. But, you know, it goes to illustrate, if they want to push something through, they have the purse strings. Okay, well, you get no new roads, you get no port infrastructure, you don't get TSA. So I think, you know, if they...
Well, yeah. Well, Alex, that's the first time somebody used it. I think it's perfect, because That's the government using the power of the currency to enact social change. Fine. Okay. The nation in general wanted that. The vast majority of us wanted that. And that's how they use it. I mean, there's probably were detractors from that at the time, but it was for the better of society. Now you're talking about a digital dollar without, they're saying there's no strings attached. Okay. Yeah. But we shall see.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always going to be strings attached with the government in anything, but not to get too far into, we try to keep it very non-opinionated on whatever the government's doing, which I think is a pretty good way to keep a lot of friends in life in general. But so kind of where I want to kind of take this next is the broader sense of, like, where do you really feel the benefit for the two main classes of people in this? You know, we've kind of covered the functionality, the general understanding of kind of the marketplace, what's going on right now. But to the point of, you know, what are going to be the best benefits to this maturing ecosystem for the individual? Is it going to be, like you said, having, you know, some exposure to it, you know, because it is a maturing asset class and being able to more securely invest in these as a part of their portfolio? Is it going to improve other aspects of life? And what do you also feel that is going to be the biggest benefit to the institutional side of things? Is it just going to be another way that they can just rake in the dollar? Is it going to be something that improves other aspects of the financial markets in general? Do you think it's going to lift up, to draw down, or is it going to be kind of a merging of paths for the institutional side of things?
Okay, so I think it's important before I answer that to understand that there is cryptocurrencies or digital assets as investment grade or investment targets. Okay. And then there's the digitization of assets that is the function of this technology that allows for better accounting, better, lack of, or not needing auditing as much. And that's the DLT, distributed ledger technology, that this is really based on, okay? And the latter is going to improve society, improve the economy, improve our way of life in a lot of meaningful ways, okay? We used to, you know, I'm old enough to remember the mimeograph, okay? You may have heard of it. You probably never used one. Do you even know what a mimeograph is?
Weren't they the ones that had like the carbon paper that like rolled on a drum that copied
stuff?
Yeah,
rolled on a drum and it made, how we made print copies of things. Okay?
We had one. I went to a part of my time, I went to a public middle school for a few years and wasn't exactly the most well-funded of places. And they had one that they actually used, which my dad got a kick out of. He was like, they still have those things? I'm like, yeah, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, and so that, I mean, more recently, the fax machine, but comically, using a fax is like the most secure way to transmit a message right now.
Ironic, right?
Ironic, right? But point is, the DLT, distributed ledger technology, the blockchain, is going to benefit the economy, commerce, and everything as it grows. The attention to tokenization, altcoins, cryptocurrency helps that. What it means for investors is, okay, what kind of investor are you? Do you read? Do you watch videos? Do you ask other people questions? Or do you just, you know, put the Wall Street Journal on the wall and throw the dart? Or do you just listen to your buddy and do what he does or she does? So the thing about it is that it's a vehicle that has a lot of murkiness around it. And I have a lot of experience with that because I've been trading options for 45 years and it used to be taboo to a lot of firms back in the day to trade options because they didn't have the risk management systems and they didn't have anybody on staff that understood it. Now, every girl and boy that goes through finance school classes at university, they get a little bit of flavor about options and then they can figure it out from there. So I think that it's going to be a boon to investors. who do their homework and find companies that are using the technology and good management to help them be profitable. But it's also going to be a boon to just the economy in general, as inventories are digitized, inventories of intellectual properties, of song rights, of future earnings. They're already doing this in minor league sports, where you can sell some of your future earnings digitally to portfolios. Okay, think about it. We can do it. Smart contracts. So I think it's you know, going to move forward more slowly in this country than the others, and it's going to be positive.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that you make, of kind of something else that we're very used to in today's day and age. It's, you know, even if someone doesn't understand what options trading is, if you talk to, you know, almost anyone, you'd be like, hey, like, they're an options trader, they're not going to be like, well, what's that? They have at least a baseline understanding of going, okay, like, yeah, I get it, you know, options trading. But it's that kind of in our lexicon, and that it's that accepted that, okay, that's a okay way to make money. There's nothing inherently wrong or nefarious. You know, granted, maybe very risky depending on which way you do it, but it's not anything mega exotic. Whereas that certainly is the case for cryptocurrency. And again, I like that analogy of saying, okay, that's kind of the evolutionary path for the utilization of the people for it. Now, institutions, what are your kind of thought process? And I think that's kind of where your company is focusing with Liquid Mercury, is focusing more on the institutional side. So
yeah,
maybe kind of a merging of the questions of what is the benefit to the institutionals? Is it just better service for their clients, new revenue streams? And then obviously, what is kind of the core focus of what you're trying to help with to mature the ecosystem for that?
Well, first question real quickly, the same people who invest, hedge or speculate in traditional assets like equities, fixed income, and their derivatives want to do that in emerging asset classes like cryptocurrency, digital assets. So for the traditional brokerages and financial institutions like banks, they've been making a decision for the last 10 years to avoid that hassle or now embrace it. And when I say now, it's happening more and more, where those clients of those banks and brokerages are saying, okay, you're not going to do it, then I'm going to split my capital. Might be only 90-10, might be 30-70-30, and move it somewhere else. So those institutions need to make a decision. Are we going to bank digital assets? Are we going to be able to have Alex or Tony keep all of their capital under this roof, even though 5 or 10% of it is in a asset class that doesn't run on our rails, that doesn't, can't be accounted for in our accounting system, that we can't measure up? And I'm not talking about taking any risk. I'm not talking about banks actually having to own Bitcoin. Just treat it as the bearer instrument that it is. If you bring bearer bonds into a bank, they can check them in. Some will take you to a safe deposit box. Some will have a bearer bond department. You can check them in, so on and so forth. Okay, so two parts of your question. One is, what does it mean to those institutions? I mean, hopefully they make money doing it. I think they will. And I think customers would pay for the convenience of being able to do all that under one roof. Okay, and the other question was, what are we doing to do that? Well, we have that solution. So we are going out, and like I said, in 1844, it was Pony Express. In 1846, it was the telegram. And these banks that back then got the approval by the government to say, yes, you can start to send information about accounts to your subsidiaries and your regionals, even if they're only a couple cities away, over these wires. And then you had the start of wire transfers early on. First, they were just memos that were stated. And that's what's happening today. And that's one of the things Liquid Mercury does. It has a full solution, including regulatory oversight, education package for banking institutions to get into the digital asset economy, basically. A lot of these banks are letting this go right by them, and some of the banks are switched on now and coming to the table.
No, I think that's definitely kind of a great end cap to this, of kind of giving a great overview of the issues, and especially kind of some of the more hot button stuff with regard to what's going on currently, different things with the market, especially with when it comes to what the U.S. government is trying to push out with a potential government issue cryptocurrency, which, again, I think on face value probably has more issues than benefit at present. Who knows? Maybe it'll turn out to be something great. Time will tell. I think that's about as fair of a statement we can make about a government issue cryptocurrency that
right.
We will see. It's tough. But with that said, my producer likes me to keep these to about 45 minutes. And I think, again, that's a good landing point. Any final thoughts for our audience before we let you go here, Tony?
Don't be scared. Read, listen, watch people like yourselves to learn. And, I think that there's a lot of horizons that are opening up in this area for us, and embrace it. And you never plunge head first into something you're unaware of. So I like to scale into things. So that's my advice.
And I would really kind of piggyback to that. One thing that I find particularly problematic in this industry is where people get information. It is such a, there's so much information out there about cryptocurrency, and I would caution anyone, understand what the motives behind wherever you get your information are coming from. If this person has a cryptocurrency that they are selling, big grain of salt, make sure that you're getting it from reputable sources. Do your research not only on what you're looking at, but on the people you're getting it from, because there aren't, good, bad, or indifferent. There aren't, CNBC's, Fox News's, Bloomberg's that are dedicated to this kind of thing right now. And there are so many areas where you can get skewed, miss, or just flat out bad information. So not only do you need to do your research, which can be kind of a garrulous thing in this as well, but make sure you understand where you're getting your information from, because that is as important, if not more important, than the research you're doing. So my aside to this, from what I've seen, is just do a lot of research on both sides of the coin. No pun intended.
Yeah, that's great. That's perfect. That's great.
All right, Tony. Well, again, I really appreciate you being on with us today. If people would like to learn more about what you have going on, although it is kind of an institutional-based thing, or anything else you have going on, what's the best way for them to reach out?
They can hit me on social medias, either Liquid Mercury or Tony Saliba, but also liquidmercury.com, all one word. We do have links to third-party sources to help people find. Coinbase has a great wealth of information, for instance, and we don't own any Coinbase or anything like that, but liquidmercury.com, and we'll help. And we'll also answer questions. We have a place there to ask us, myself personally. I will answer these if people have questions about either digital assets, cryptocurrencies, or options.
All right, fantastic. Well, thank you much, Tony, for being with us again. This has been an edition of the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. My name is Alex Perney, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alternative Investing Advantage podcast. Tune in next week for more investing tips and strategies.
Want to hear more episodes of the Alternative Investing Advantage? Search podcast at AdvantaIRA.com and subscribe.